This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Front row on The Bigger Picture. More often than not, when we say the name Bach, Johann Sebastian Bach on this show, it is in the context of orchestral performances taking place in one of the concert halls in the Klang Valley, whether it's Dewan Philharmonic Petronas, the PJ Civic Center, Bentley Music Academy, or in one of the smaller private spaces for chamber quartets. Rarely do we hear the composer's choral works. We might hear excerpts, but this weekend's Bach's St. John Passion will be performed in its entirety, and the conductor David Chin and two soloists Felix Yun and Caleb Wu are here. Welcome to the show, gentlemen.
Pleasure to be
Thank
here.
Thank you. Nice meeting you.
We started off with the overture. How strong is the sacred music following in the country that a performance of St. John Passion will find an audience?
I think we are on a breaking ground here, and this is the first time we're performing this work here in Malaysia, in my knowledge. And I think is a very new experience for all of us, whether it be the performers or the audience.
How would you describe what we just heard?
It is very majestic, very human, very glorious piece of music.
Would you say that piece sets the tone? Does it represent the kind of music that the performance shows? You know, is it going to be that sort of thing?
Yes, what we just listened is actually the beginning of the entire work. It's the overture, and is written in minor, in a minor key, and very majestic too. So oftentimes when we listen to this Baroque music, whether it be Handel's Messiah or of any of Bach's cantatas, we hear something majestic, but not set necessarily in a major key, but in minor mode, so that we hear a glorious king, but also with suffering.
What defines sacred music? You know, when we use that term, is it the theme of the piece or is it something else?
Yeah, I think the theme of the piece is the most important. And I think the audience is very important too.
Yeah, so sacred music, I think, means to set apart.
So what, when we say the theme of the piece, what theme makes it sacred music?
I think because if this particular theme is talking about the last moment of Jesus before he went onto the cross. So it is kind of a storytelling, a biblical story. And the Jesus Christ, the theme of this particular work, we doing the storytelling from a week before or even a night before he goes on to the cross, that we just like glimpsing the history of the event. And this very effective theme to a lot of people that we have chance to like linking the present and the past, it means so much to me, at least. I think it's so important for the general public nowadays.
You talked about storytelling. Does sacred music usually involve a plot with characters and so on, or is it music performed for music's sake?
I think there are two different types. I think when we talk about oratorios, it's actually started during this Lent. The people are prohibited from performing opera. So composers starting to come up with the ideas that, okay, we should write something similar to opera, but something that allowed us to perform during Lent season. So oratorio, setting music to biblical story without any costumes or without any costume or props, but highly dramatic music setting to the story of the Bible. So yes, that means that you will find different characters throughout the oratorios. In this case, in St. John Passion, you'll find an evangelist, which is the tenor solo sung by Felix Suin. He will be the narrator that telling us the story throughout. And then when we have different characters like Jesus, like Pilate, then you will hear them in conversation like Peter and others. So, yeah.
Who are other key composers when it comes to the sacred music form? I mean, this is by Bach, you mentioned mm-hmm. Handel. Who else?
Well, I think during Bach's time, some other composers were really, really famous in writing music in general, or oratorio specifically. I can think of Telemann, I can think of Vivaldi, yep, all these people.
Do you think that you have to be a believer for sacred music to move you?
I don't think so. In my opinion, God sees people. It's not you are a believer or not, just people. And when we come to the music is speaks itself about the story. And this is, I think, is the objective of the work, to tell the story. So we need not to understand the story very well before we go into the concert. Of course, if you can investigate a little bit before you go into the concert, that will help a lot.
How did all of you get interested and involved with sacred music or with choral music in the first place?
First, I am a believer, and I love music so much. My secondary school teacher brought me to the church, and then I started in the choir. And at first, I wasn't so not too interested in classical music, but then in my church, like we have a orchestra, we have a really big choir, and then I started to love classical music.
For me, it's similar. I used to hate classical music. I hated it. You know, I hated people playing violins. Watching from TV, I remember when they still show someone playing violin on TV. And then also, I started to go to church. And then I saw all these people marching into the church with choir ropes. The very first time when I saw that, it was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. And then afterwards, I think when I was 16, my senior pastor retired, and he was also the conductor of the choir. So I kind of volunteered myself and said, I'm going to conduct the choir. So that's what happened to me.
To me, I hated classical music in the very beginning because I learned...
There's a theme here.
Yes. Yes.
I learned like 9 years of violin, but I even did not read music. But maybe I can conclude that because I was not introduced to good music in my very early age, mm-hmm. But once I heard good music performing live, mm-hmm. That changed my perspective on what music is. There's a lot of depiction or the effectiveness of using tones to describe pictures that's mm-hmm. amazed me a lot.
I think live performance is really important. Like the experience just change your perspective about classical music.
So I think for us as artists, it's very important, especially in these days and age, not only you just to put up a classical concert, but you have to put up a good quality classical concert, because maybe, you know, like this work that people are going to come and listen to, this might be the first and maybe the only time they get to hear this. So we have great responsibility to actually do this well. So,
kind of pressure.
Yeah, pressure. Lots of pressure.
You know, and David, Felix, you both talked about that feeling of listening to music in church and that being kind mm-hmm. of a transformative moment. How much of this performance do you think depends on the setting? Because it is set mm-hmm. in a church. You know, how much of somebody's enjoyment would actually depend on the fact that you are in, you know, kind of a mood setting?
Yeah, this work originally was written for a Good Friday service. So, like, this entire work was this service. And then you have a very short sermon in between part one and part two, and some responsive reading before and after. But, you know, in the past, I don't know, 50, 100 years, this has become a standard concert repertoire, which means anywhere you go in the world, you go to the States, you're in Europe, you're in London, you will hear this work perform many times every year. It's a very, very popular repertoire. So I think if you are a believer, you come to this concert, it can be a worshipful experience for you. But if you're not a believer, you come to this concert, you can appreciate this work merely as a story, like if you would attend an opera or a Shakespeare's play or something.
Because this music is nearly 300 years old and it has its own music history in Europe, what do you think is required as a conductor to make it relevant to today's listeners very far away from the continent where it originated from?
Mm-hmm. It's a very good question, and there are many aspects to this. And first of all, our ears nowadays is very different from people's ears back then. Because of the, we listen to things with louder, with higher frequency nowadays. So maybe something that shocked the audience back then, nowadays to us is like nothing. We don't get it sometimes, you know. But so also in the Baroque era, they have this Baroque instruments. So the frequency is a bit lower and the sound is a bit softer. But we are using modern instruments. But we try to keep it to the size, the ensemble size, whether it be the singers or the orchestra. We try to keep it to the size of the Baroque era. We only have 12 singers this time, and then about 18 instrumentalists, so about 30 people in total. And we try to make it as dramatic as possible, and we try to deliver the message as clear as possible. And also we'll be projecting the supertitle in three languages, in German, the original language, and also in English and Mandarin, so that sentence by sentence, so that people will follow. And I think it will make a great impact to our audience.
With your 12 singers, why do we have two soloists from outside of Malaysia? Why was there a need to kind of import? Could we not find somebody in
Well, of course, there are many, many wonderful singers here in Malaysia that I actually just recently work with in June, I think, when we have a Handel's concert. Well, first of all, Caleb and I, we went all the way back. We went to graduate school together, and we performed this work last year in New York together. So he's very reliable, and we have done many Bach works together. And Felix, I met him last year also in Hong Kong when I was doing a Bach concert. With a tenor to sing Bach's work, is especially for the role of evangelist, is very, very difficult. Not just technically, but you have to have a certain kind of instrument as in your voice, your body, in order to be able to do this kind of work. So, and I think it's also a very nice collaborative effort for artists from different places to work with musicians in Malaysia to have that fellowship, to have that communication and collaboration.
Coming up, we'll be hearing from Felix and Caleb about how challenging it is to perform this passion. You are listening today to Front Row on the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. You're listening to Front Row on the Bigger Picture. I'm Lee Chui Lin, and in the studio with me today are David Chin, Felix Soon, and Caleb Wu. They're all here to talk about their upcoming performance of Bach's St. John Passion. What did we just hear?
This is the number that comes right after the overture, which talks about the scene where Judas is bringing all the soldiers to capture Jesus.
That's why it's so dramatic.
Yes, very dramatic.
Yes. Felix, Caleb, how demanding is it to sing this passion?
Let me speak first, maybe. Firstly, I think the language itself is difficulty for me first, because my first language is not German. My first language is Cantonese. And so in Cantonese, we have a lot of different differences from the German text, because we do not have accent on it. We speak Cantonese word by word, very accented. But in German, you have a stress and weak syllables. That's very tricky somehow when I learned the piece or the text. So we need to bring the piece to a certain level that can communicate with people or to let people to think, oh, what are you talking about? We need to guess, or we need to phrase or rephrase it into a more conventional way how a native speaker to speak. And so this takes a lot of time for me to prepare the recitative, the storytelling portion of the work.
Yeah, I think for a singing evangelist, it's always a dream role for lyric tenor to do. And as a trained classical singer, we used to sing with the bel canto style, which is the Italian style. I think the really difficult thing is about the German too. The German has so much consonances to deal with, which is like really hard for me to sing in the style as well as technically correct. And I think evangelist is especially challenging because I have like 30 recitative to sing, and I have to lead the whole story. So and to sing with the Baroque style is like I have to adjust technically in order to sound right for the music.
So how long did it take you guys to get your head around the German and then start thinking about the music?
Several years, I think. Once we started to learn German, and once we reach the text and we ponder on the text, and we find out the substance of the text, why did Bach or why did John to choose the text to describe the thing like that, and the connection to making sense with what we are going to sing is the most preparational part of the thing, I think.
David, earlier you talked about, you know, meeting these guys in different parts, mm-hmm. as well as staging performances in different parts of the world, you mm-hmm. know, including New York, including Hong Kong. Has this particular piece been performed in this country before, and why now?
Well, in my knowledge, this is the first time. This weekend will be the first time this work is being performed here. And, you know, when I say that, I say it with great joy and great pride, but at the same time also with much regret. You know why? Because this work has been written since 1724, I think, in my knowledge, if my memory is serving me correctly. And throughout the entire world has been performing this piece over and over and over again. But this is only our first time. But I think it's a great year to do it, because this year is the 330th birthday of Johann Sebastian Bach. And I cannot find a better year to perform this. And he was born in 1685, so this is 2015, 330th year. And the entire world is celebrating his birthday. So this is the great time.
Malaysia's time. Contribution to the celebration
yes,
will be this.
Yes. Yeah. And it's also very special for myself, because it's actually my 10th year away from the country, 10th year in the States. And it's also happened to be my 30th birthday.
It's a lot of happy anniversaries, yes, all in one year. So we've been talking about St. John Passion, but let's break that down. Who is the St. John in this Passion? Is it John the Baptist or John the Beloved who wrote the Gospel?
I think it's John the Beloved. It's not John the Baptist. So a disciple of Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The author of the Gospel of John, because St. John Passion, most of the text that's sung by the evangelist is taken from the Gospel of John, chapter 18 and 19.
So from a very close perspective, what Jesus did and mm-hmm. how Jesus being treated.
From his perspective, right. From John's perspective, yes.
Yeah. Okay, so that's who St. John is. Mm-hmm. And what meaning does the word passion have in this context when you use it in mm-hmm. this phrase?
When we say St. John Passion, I think some people might find it confusing. I think more appropriately we should say is the passion of Jesus Christ according to St. John. So in German it's with Johannes Passion. So it's the according to his perspective. Mm-hmm.
And passion, from what I understand, is actually passions were intended to be performed as part of church services. Is that right?
That's right.
What is the meaning of the word? Because passion here, I think many people have a
passion for
different
it.
Passion
yes,
for
exactly.
It. Or
it's
passionate
different.
Love or
emotion.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So when we say the passion of Christ, mm-hmm. what does that mean?
Well, so during, you know, we have Good Friday, and then we have the 40 days of Lent leading up to that. So when we say passion, normally, even before Bach's time, back in, I don't know, back in the Middle Ages, during Good Friday, they will have a passion service where they will read the entire story of Jesus Christ's passion, and the suffering of Christ, all the way from the betrayal leading up to the cross. They will read it or they will chant it. So, and that is the tradition that led up to this composition composed by Johann.
And this particular passion, the word, I think in English, well, we can define it as an emotional situation, but it also says it is the death or the crucifixion of Jesus Christ. But we all know about God so loved the world. So this is the manifestation of Jesus Christ's love. So it's so passionate. It's also making sense to me.
What form does the story take? You know, is it told in a single part or are there two parts?
Well, this entire work is written in two parts, part one and part two. But I think the basic structure of this work, so like I mentioned earlier, you have the evangelist singing the text right from the Gospel of John, chapter 18 and 19. But then Bach also inserted some poetry and some chorale, some congregational hymns in between these verses as kind of some sort of reflection to what was happening during Jesus' time. So you bear with me. So you have this people during Bach's time writing how they feel about this event. So Peter here, he just betrayed Jesus. So what about me in my daily life? I'm betraying Jesus too, you know, in my daily life. So there's a kind of like a cross-cultural, is beyond time type of music composition.
Cross-cultural and cross-historical even.
That's right.
Earlier we also talked about, we've talked about, you know, Felix and Caleb and how you guys will be soloing and performing at this, but there are also going to be 18 instrumentalists,
yes.
Was that right?
Mm-hmm.
What musical instruments will be accompanying the chorus and the soloists?
This will be a very standard Baroque orchestra. We will have two flutes, two oboes, and we will have the general string sections, and we will have an organ, and myself, I'll be conducting from the harpsichord. Unfortunately, we couldn't find a real harpsichord here, so it will be a very nice digital harpsichord that we can find.
Okay.
That's what I'll be conducting from.
And we've talked about the historical background of this as well as the religious context of it. So as 21st century listeners then, you know, David, you talked earlier about how some things might go over our heads. We might not notice certain things. How would you suggest we find access to this work to really appreciate it fully?
Well, when I go around or even when I'm teaching my students, you know, how you appreciate classical music, you know, most of us, when we go into the opera house or when we listen to classical songs, we will find it very boring because it takes such a long time to say one thing or it takes such a long time just to sing one word. But oftentimes composers, they elongate or they give one word particular stress by elongating it. So I would say, you know, listen to how Bach, I mean, go with the text and see how he uses music to reflect the text, to reflect the tone of the text, and how, you know, why would he choose some of the numbers? Why would it be solo? Some of it would be chorus. You know, how he said, especially during the most dramatic, I think the most dramatic part is the crucifixion scene, where you will hear the chorus singing, "Crucify him, crucify him, crucify him." Very rich orchestral tone, very violent singing, and you will find it very dramatic.
We actually have a clip of that, so, you know, here's a preview.
Let's listen to that.
So I suppose that's the crucify him that you're referring to.
Yes, I mean, I don't understand how people would think that this kind of music is boring. You know, it's so dramatic, and you would not find any music that comes after this to be so dissonant, to be so dramatic, probably until late 19th or early 20th century, you know, music by Stravinsky or Mahler. So Bach was very forward thinking.
There is another piece that we can listen to that I was hoping you guys could tell me a bit more about.
Okay.
So what was that bit?
So that was right after Jesus Christ's death, where...
Es ist vollbracht.
Yes, the earth is shaking, you know, the temple is breaking down and all that. It's very dramatic.
Yeah. No, I mean, do you think that the emotion will come across regardless of whether or not, A, you're a believer, and B, you understand this form of music?
I think so, because you just, as a person... you are seeing the scene that the music is describing. Just be honest to your own feeling is the most important part to participate in the music. We don't need to be introduced at how you should feel about this particular music. But this kind of descriptive music, especially we have some mannerism in it because we kind of exaggerate some effect about earth quaking. I think it's so important to appreciate music in this way, because we all read Bible in a very boring way, especially me growing in church, and this made me a distant from what the message is speaking about.
Finally then, you've overcome the problem of the German, you know, all these issues. Are there any fears you have left going into the performances this weekend?
I think it's my physical strength of it. Like for evangelist, I have to sing throughout those 2.5 hours. And yes, I have to really rest well for it.
Me too, because I love eating. So in Malaysia, there's a lot of nice curry, laksa, or bak kut teh, and so, but all are heated foods, and it could cause me a lot of health problem or the throat tea problem.
Well, you can have it on Monday.
Oh yes.
David, any concerns?
Well, I think it's very challenging for me for this concert because not only I'm doing the music part, I have to think about the ticketing, marketing, and all these aspects. But like I say, I'm very, very thankful for this opportunity, and we are really, really looking forward to sharing this masterpiece with the audience in Malaysia.
And they get chance to sing.
Yes, the audience will get to sing because
German.
English. In English.
Just checking.
Because throughout the Passion, they are about 11th chorales. Chorales means congregation hymns, you know, because like you say, this was written for a service context. So throughout the entire concerts, there will be 8 chorales that we have translated into English in the program book, and the audience actually get up to stand up, to stretch, and then to sing with us.
Wonderful. Yes. Bach's St. John Passion will be performed on Saturday, August 1st and Sunday, August 2nd. That's this weekend at the Good Shepherd Lutheran Church on 40 Jalan Othman in PJ Old Town. Performances are at 7:30 p.m. However, there will also be a pre-performance discussion with the conductor at 6:30 p.m. Tickets are priced at 60 ringgit and 100 ringgit. Thank you very much for coming in today, gentlemen.
Thank you. Our pleasure.
I've been speaking with David Chin, Felix Yun, and Caleb Wu. We've been discussing their upcoming performance of Bach's St. John Passion. You've been listening to Front Row on the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.